And the, you know, for you new people, you can't, it can't be stressed enough. If you don't keep a profile, how are you going to know what's going on at the track? And I find in Arlington, they run a day, 2 days. Sometimes you get a stretch of good weather. They generally change on Wednesday, which is the first day back, because they've had a chance Tuesday to work the track. But you'll find that that racetrack without water, I was sitting in the Nugget last night, and these guys were, or yesterday, and the guys were talking about early speed. Yeah, at some distances, but how early are we talking about? Are we talking about pressers winning most of the races? Yes. Early horses, if there's one early horse in a race, they'll run wire to wire. The longer distances are very sustained. And all of these are things that by doing just a little bit of work in the morning when you get read your paper are going to put you on money, because you're foolish walking up to that window and making a bet. You know, some people like to see closers, and there's a time and a place in Arlington as for closers, but right now it hasn't been at 6.5 and 7 furlongs. And I'll get off. Thank you.
Paul, you don't work. You don't have a job anymore, do you?
No, I'm retired.
Everybody in this. The only two people in the organization who have jobs are Ginny Butler and Yakima. And if you don't have a job in Yakima, you know, what is else to do? And Bert Main, who I guess because he's a preacher, that's really a calling and not a job. None of you people work, do you? None of our teachers work? No. Well, I know some of you work. Hey, listen, it was pretty disastrous news that the unemployment rate has gone to its highest level. The recession that they keep telling us is we're coming out of. Folks, let's be serious. Jobs no longer exist that existed during the yuppies years of the 80s, where people got overpaid for doing whatever they did. And those jobs no longer exist. And the world is overpopulated. I don't know what your religion is, but they keep saying we should not have abortions and we should not have birth control, and the politicians support it, and yet they go down to Brazil and say the reason we have all these problems is because the world is overpopulated. Now, if any of you know how to keep the world from being overpopulated without some form of birth control, please let me know. Or, you know, to me it's more of a crime to see a starving child with his, all his features mangling and none, than it is to be concerned about whether God wants us to not to control our sexual drives or birth control. I mean, it's just to me it's a tragedy. See, these children lying in the streets who will never have a chance in life, who are starving and will always starve. To me, that's sicker than casting a moral aspersion on population control. I don't know how you feel. It has nothing to do with handicapping. But it does have something to do with the economy. As the world becomes more and more overpopulated, people become more neurotic for space. More psychotic behavior goes on. The politicians are totally unable to handle it, as they've proven in the last couple of years. Less and less can we depend on the social structure that we've depended on for years, the institutional structure to take care of us. More and more we're returning to the jungle of independence, where each man must be an entity unto himself and be able to support himself, herself, in a very dog-eat-dog, overpopulated world. The economy that we suffer now is just the beginning of a long-range situation in which the opulence, the false opulence of the past is no longer going to be with us. We have the greatest opportunity of any group in the history of mankind to support ourselves, to make all the money we need, if we don't get too greedy, to be free from the bonds of social institution and economic structure. And we warned you of this in 1987 for the first time in the follow-up. And a lot of people said, oh, they kept on playing. We warned that this recession would come. We almost named it to the year. And now it has come. Now, folks, you have to get serious. And you can do it. That's why I'm making a point of the fact that all the people who will be addressing you at this seminar, none of them work for a living. All of them make their money at the racetrack. They're diverse and different personalities. We've got everything from Schmidt to Brohammer to Bradshaw, my God, and Marion Jones. All of these are different types of personalities. Every one of them came from a different walk of life, from a different belief system, from a different religious background, from a different parentage. But each one of them may never have been joined together in a common bond except for the fact that they all had an interest, not in making money at the races or not in winning races so much as they had all a common interest in being free. Each one of these persons sought personal freedom and found that this was the best way to do it. Behind each one of these fellows is not just their own self-esteem and their own ability. Behind those who were able to bring their spouses is a woman. And I'd like to introduce some of those women now. My wife always leaves the room when I say that. In the back of the room, the lovely tan, just back from Hawaii look of Shirley Brohammer. Now, when Jim Bradshaw goes with someone, he used to say, well, I make her walk 5 feet behind. She heard he said that. I'll tell you, she makes him go to the races now every week. She drives him, and Jim is going to the races twice as much as he ever did before. And by gosh, you say, I don't need no dang computer. And she says, hell, you don't. And wouldn't you know that he'd name her Leroy. Leroy Bradshaw. My wife has left the room, huh? So I'll introduce my mistress, Jan Ross. This afternoon, one of the more inspirational speakers was Marion Jones, and he really put his finger on the... There she is. That's my wife, Mary. And my son, Shane, for whom handicapping has become the source of his new income since they terminated his job. Believe me, folks, he is getting serious. And he's one of that middle age group in the 30s who, you're in your 30s. Middle age. Hey, David Niven and Daryl Zanuck are having a conversation. Both these guys are over 60. And Daryl Zanuck said to David Niven, says, well, how does it feel to be middle-aged, David? And David said, Daryl, how many people you know 120 years old? Howard, you are. You're middle-aged now. So, as I was talking about Marion was making this, you all heard Marion this afternoon, he was not only was he hit to the point, he hit to the reason why a lot of people don't win at the races. And after it was all over, everybody just walked up and said, boy, you're funny. See what they think of you? They think of you as a comedian now. He was being very serious. Someone said to me, he says, oh, that Marion, he just kills me the way he rolls his eyes. And I said, well, if you think that was funny, you ought to hear him, see him roll his eyes when that Clinton guy says that Arkansas is an equal opportunity state. How many of you from Arkansas? We won't tell that one at the Oklahoma seminar, I guarantee. And folks, we have a kind of a guy who's, well, he does an awful lot for us that nobody knows about, and he handles all the problems. and of booking the hotels and getting everything set up. And that man is behind us there, Mr. Spencer Toner. He will be operating the little machine that makes all of the horses come alive and all the little readouts come alive tomorrow. And the unsung, when he wakes, he's the only guy who can do audio work fast asleep. A man who tirelessly, if he were a woman, he'd be a camp follower. But he tirelessly goes around the country following these seminars and makes the tapes. We charge him, he charges pretty much costs. We don't take any money from it, but all he does is make his travel expenses and replace his motor in his car every 100,000 miles. Joe Ray. It's always an adventure knowing that Joe's coming to a seminar because we've driven with him. We were going to go to a restaurant in New Orleans one night, and it was just on the edge of town, about 3 or 4 miles out, and we were going across Lake Pontchartrain, which is the longest bridge in the world. And he kept saying, "No, this is where it is." I said, "Joe, you're in a, look at nothing but water around us. We're on Mississippi." "Nope." And we practically got to the Mississippi border. And Joe finally conceded that we were not going toward that restaurant. And there were six people. We had two clients in the car. We were romancing them. And we never heard from them since. They joined Barry Birkin. Now it's time for the serious part. I forget what we said. I'd like you to read this letter. This is one of the reasons why Glenn, well, I'm going to bring back up here. I want you to read this letter. It's on page 1 of the manual. Oh, they don't have it. It's not on your manual. I'll read it. This is on the manual you'll get tomorrow. It's from Stephen Clary. Stephen's here. And I asked his permission to do it, and he said he would be fine. He said, "Dearest Dr. Sarton, I became a PERCO member in February of this year, and I'm using Synergism, too. I don't want to make Bob feel good. Though I live in North Carolina, I attend the Maryland tracks and was delighted to see in a recent issue of the follow-up there was a teaching member in Bowie, Maryland, Mr. Glenn Connolly. I wrote Mr. Connolly and got his phone number, and we have since spent a couple of hours on the phone. Before becoming a PERCO member," we like this letter because he throws in a plug for everybody, "I was using a program he wrote their own program, based on Tom Brohammer's book, Modern Pace Handicapping. The switch to Synergism 2 was difficult at first. I had been keeping daily variance and found it unsettling to abandon this security blanket and use the auto adjustments in Synergism 2. From the limited material I had been able to read before I became a member, I thought the Sarton methodology was a better approach. After studying all the material I received, I knew it was superior. And even though my win percentage suffered for the first 60 races, I stayed the course. I didn't know it at the time, but I was a classic linear thinker." And this is what we're going to talk about, some of this. But this man was able to recognize it. "A couple of calls to Mr. Connolly, a successful 4-day trip to Keeneland, followed by 2 successful trips to Pimlico, and all I can say is thank you, Dr. Sarton, for the opportunity to share your brilliant work and to have met Glenn Connolly. Last week, I met with Mr. Connolly at Laurel and spent 2 days at the track with him. Glenn is certainly a credit to your organization. Amen. He could not have been more gracious with his time and knowledge. I've become quite attached to Synergism, too, but must admit watching an expert like Glenn work with Thoromation was nothing short of amazing. Dr. Sarton, I'd like to be involved in the Sarton methodology now, specifically using," and he goes on to talk about the advanced programs. It doesn't matter what program. Let me talk to you just for a second before I bring Glenn back up here. And Glenn will explain this in his own way, because Glenn has used every program. The program is not the thing. I'd like to quote to you from one of those truck drivers. It's in the book, Pace Makes the Race, but I think it bears repeating. What he said was this: "Handicapping is like juggling. So you see those jugglers up there on the stage, and boy, they can juggle those 10 pins or balls or whatever they're juggling. The more they can juggle, the more money they get, and the more the audience applauds and claps and everything. But he says, you get a bad juggler up there, and he tries to juggle more than 2 things, and they fall all over the floor, and he flops. And he says, that's the way it is with handicapping, with information. If you're only capable of juggling 2 bits of information, and you can win juggling 2 bits of information, That's what you should be using. If when you want to sell what you call a more advanced program that asks you to juggle 6, 7, 8 bits of information, and when you try to juggle all that extra information, all the 10 pins fall on the floor, then you shouldn't be using that program. You should only juggle that which you feel comfortable with that which you can use. So, for those who say, hey, I get great results with phase one, then that's what you should capitalize on and optimize your ability. For those who get great results with synergism two, hey, keep getting the great results. You don't have to climb Mount Everest because it's there. For those of you who do want to climb Mount Everest because it's there, or have found that you get superior results and superior income with the more advanced programs, they're there too. The point you have to say to yourself is, where am I the most successful? What program satisfies my needs the most? Maybe make a transition later, but don't, I urge you not to just get a program because it's there. Get the program that really grabs you, the one that you can feel confident in. If that program makes you say, oh boy, that really makes me feel secure, then that's the one for you. Whether it costs $100 or $500 or $600 is unimportant. The cost is not the issue. It's how much value can you get out of it. I've known people who bought programs for $500 or $600 and paid for them in the first day. I've known people who bought programs for $100 and haven't paid for them yet. It has to do with the individual's ability to use them. And a man who has used them all and who has not had a lot of personal help from us, because he lives on the East Coast, and we have only seen him. He figured it out on his own because he knew that if he had to wait for one of us, if he had to wait for the guy we had on the East Coast at the time to help him, it would be 90 years old before he got any help. So he learned on his own, and he's used every program we have. Here's Glenn Connolly.
Biggest seminar. My name's Glenn Connolly. I've been a member of the Satin methodology for 4.5 years. Back at the time I first became acquainted with the Satin methodology and subscribed, of course, to the follow-up magazine, there were a number of articles in the magazine that alluded to the fact that there were very few clients in the state of Maryland, that apparently there was a belief or rumor that the Satin methodology would not be effective at Laurel and Pimlico. Well, when I read this, it made little sense to me. I couldn't understand why it wouldn't be just as effective at those tracks as anywhere else in the country. And I kind of took it upon myself to prove that that was the case. Now, at the time, 4.5 years ago, Phase 3 was the program that was available. So as Howard indicated, I started with Phase 3 and then went to UltraScan, well, Synergism, Synergism 1, Synergism 2. The Phase 3 and Synergism programs are velocity-based programs. And as I mentioned, UltraScan, which was sort of a precursor to some of the advanced programs such as Energy, KGen, Kinetic Generator, and Therimation. All of these programs work very, very well indeed. One of the most amazing things, though, about the methodology and the programs that you'll be using is that they're almost self-correcting. Because if you do your handicapping in a conscientious fashion and carefully keep records, your post-race analysis and review of your records, and what I find very helpful, my marked-up daily racing form, is going to indicate to you what you need to do to improve your performance. Therefore, it's not necessary to go outside of the methodology and come up with some sort of a brew of a little bit of system A and a little bit of system B and a little bit of system C. Contained wholly within the certain methodology is the capability for you to handicap and to perform post-race analysis to find out where your problems exist, and then to take steps to correct them. Now, it was a real pleasure to work with someone like Steve Cleary, and I'm most appreciative of the letter that he sent to Howard. But I do want to mention one other gentleman whom I've been working very closely with, and that's Arthur Cameron, who's a Washington, D.C. attorney who's using Theramation. Art, will you stand up, please? Arthur is very, very knowledgeable about the Theramation program. We attend the track almost daily, and it's a real pleasure to see people who had been having problems in contender selection or pace line selection or even determining which is the appropriate race to play to show such dramatic progress as Arthur has shown. And I predict that with Steve's ability and synergism, he's going to find the application of Theramation, EXDC, and KGen to be equally challenging and interesting to him. So the important point is we have many tools, tools for contender selection, tools for pace line selection. You're going to see a host of races presented to you tomorrow in which various programs are used and various techniques are employed to accomplish these tasks. Now, Howard has indicated to you that it's your responsibility to determine which tools and which programs suit your style. If you believe in making cars and do not have faith that winners can be produced without going through that process, then you probably would be happy with a velocity-based program. On the other hand, if the notion of a dream race being established within the program and automatic cars being generated, perhaps one of the advanced programs would be more appropriate for you. Now, phase one was mentioned as both a handicapping tool, a handicapping program, and also as a contender selection tool. In like manner, the KGen program was initially advertised as a contender and pace line selection program to be used to augment the use of the energy program. Now, for quite a few months, I found that the KGen program was an extremely effective contender selection, pace line selection, and handicapping program. So you can just about use any of these programs for the spectrum of activities in which you feel it will produce the results that you're looking for. Starting tomorrow morning, when we begin looking at some of the races that are in the manual that was handed out to you, you'll see various approaches with various programs. And please don't make the mistake of assuming that because someone is presenting a race using a program that you're not currently using, that you can go to sleep or take a mental siesta for a moment, because the principles associated with picking contenders, picking pace lines, picking races to handicap are common problems regardless of which program you're going to employ. So please, I urge you to pay attention to everything that's said tomorrow, and don't tune in and tune out because you think the information might not be applicable to you, because I assure you at the end of the seminar, and when you go home and read these manuals for the next 10 or 15 times, each time getting more and more information out of them, you'll find out that this will have been one of the most productive weekends that you could ever have spent. Again, we're glad to see you here. All of the teaching members and charter members are here to help you, and we look forward to speaking to you during the course of the week. Thank you very much.
We said in the flyer that we would present the manifesto of the handicapping revolution. And that's what's being done, but it's not being done by me solely. It's being done through the words of these people. In the light of getting serious, I know people listen to these seminars and say, well, hey, when are you going to get to teach us how to win? Folks, what we're doing now is teaching you how to win. What you're hearing now, the voices of winners telling you their procedure, their perceptions, is more important to winning than sitting around and doing a race and showing you which pace line to get. The manifesto, if it could be best expressed in the words that there are no rules. Why do we call it the handicapping revolution? Well, Tom Brohammer kind of helped out a little bit there. Not he, but the person who wrote the dust jacket of his book. A lot of people said it was a revolutionary methodology, but when I read these words, there is a revolution going on in the world of thoroughbred handicapping, and Tom Brohammer is one of its leaders. Is Tom here?
I think he went home.
Oh, good, then I can talk behind his back. Folks, when I read that, I was flattered because it said handicap, but I was thinking, Tom Brohammer, a revolutionary? If in the Revolutionary War, when Washington crossed the Delaware or whatever, the Potomac or wherever he did, to shoot General Howe's troops, you know what Brohammer would have done if he'd been General Washington? He'd have gone across the river and invited him to tea. Brohammer is not a conflagration type of guy. He's got a lot of character and a lot of morality, but can you imagine Brohammer leading a revolution? I mean, it just doesn't fit. This guy's so sweet and loving. He gets along with everybody. Some of his best friends, Rousseau, Quinn, they don't know it, but he led them into a revolution. These are the guys who, these are King George's agents. Tom Brohammer's best friends are King George's agents. They don't know it, but he's conned them into becoming revolutionaries themselves. Every time they say something nice about us, every time they hang out with Tom and people see him with Tom, they're finding that they're slowly but surely joining the revolution. So there are a lot of ways to fight a revolution without having to go to war. And Tom, he did it the, what do you call yourself, a fifth column? Tom's the infiltrator. Now me, I like to shoot him. The British are coming, let's shoot the soldier. But I love that term. There is a revolution going on in the world of handicapping. So we call this now the evolution of the handicapping revolution. What is our revolution? What are we revolting against? We're revolting against all the axioms that cause people to lose and have caused them to lose for generations. We're revolting against the whole concept that there are such things as rules for winning races. Is anybody in this room still naive enough to believe there are rules for winning races? If there are, please raise your hand. I'll assign you to someone. You cannot win with rules, and yet people cry out for rules. Even you will hear yourself over the weekend. If you listen back to the tapes, you will hear yourself crying out for rules. Now, why is that? Since the time we first remember, have any cognitive memories, someone has told me, don't do that. Don't do that. Mommy, what did your preacher say? Your teacher, your mother, your father, everybody says, now Johnny, now Mabel. There's a rule for everything, and everything has its rules, and you have to live by the rules. Rules, 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 rules. You went to the first grade, you got rules. You got rules for everything. You got rules reading and writing and arithmetic. I comes before C except after E, or whatever it is. That's how I learned to spell. Whatever it is, one of those things. Anyhow, who cares, as long as it's phonetic. And how come now we've been taught rules? You went to high school, you got rules. You went to college for the first 4 years, you got rules. And suddenly, if you went to graduate school, they had no more rules. And a lot of people flunked graduate school because of that, because no rules. You can't take someone who's been taught that there are rules for everything all their lives and suddenly immerse them in something with no rules. It's an internal decision you have to make. To realize that in a stochastic event, there are guidelines, there are certain laws of probability, and there are certain factors which provide ground kind of indicators, but not rules. And once you get over the fact and stop seeking rules, then you start winning. But all my mail is a cry for rules. I lost this race. Show me what I... And we help people. We try to do everything we can. We don't shun people just because they're crying out for rules. They're crying out for attention. They're crying out, says, please give me help. Please supply me with an answer. But unfortunately, usually what they want is a rule. Now, how can we all, in that rule-bound training we've all had, in that rule-bound society in which we live, nobody ever obeys the rules, but, I mean, everybody wants them. If we gave you rules, you wouldn't obey them. How many of you ever bought a system with 10 simple rules? How many didn't? How many are lying? I love this response. Hey, everybody in this room, I bet, has bought some kind of a system where it's had 10 easy rules, or 5 even, maybe. One easy rule, yeah. Don't go. And people love it. Why do you think these system sellers all have rules? Because they know you want rules, so they'll give you rules. Rules, don't use the best of the last two pace lines. Don't take any races off for 30 days. Don't take a horse going up in class or down in weight or whatever the hell it is. Don't play anything but a top 10 jockey or top 10 trainer, whatever that is. They all have rules. And people love them. They lose with it, but they love them. Tom Brohammer, when he was young, bought systems that had rules. He learned that they didn't work. So all these people that you look up and say, oh, those guys are good, they all, oh, you ought to hear Bradshaw's story. You will. Bradshaw, oh, he got a tragic story. Couldn't win for losing. And he went around looking for rules. Some guy said, I'll meet you at the eighth pole and give you a rule. And Bradshaw said, wonderful. Then he said, where in the hell's the eighth pole? Now, how do we overcome racing's lack of rules? We do it by profiling and by modeling. You heard that when Tom Renner wanted to go back to Chicago, he wanted a profile of the track so he could model his handicapping to fit those readouts which were producing the winners at the track, knowing full well that that could change between the time he took off and landed at Arlington. So he called Paul, and Paul gave him his latest profile. He got to Arlington. The track profile did not change while he was there, and he won, what, 10 out of 8 races? Or 8 out of
11. 9 out of 11.
We're the only group that can win 10 out of 8. It's tough keeping up with Dick Mitchell, so we... So he modeled in profile. Now, that's almost as good as a rule. Now, he has no rules. He looks to see, oh, turn time's working. If turn time's not working, he's not going to tell you, play the top two turn times. See, the trouble with these seminars is, and I want to get this in right now. If you hear a speaker, a Brohammer gets up here and he said, boy, the 6.5 furlong races at Hollywood Park, or Santa Anita in this case, were all running sustained. If next year you go to Santa Anita and you say, well, Brohammer said that they always run sustained, and you bet the sustain in the early wins, and then you say, Brohammer's a liar. We had somebody do that to Brohammer once. This is when he almost became a revolutionary. Look, these profiles that you're going to see that these men have done when you're handicapping tomorrow, these profiles represent the time that the profiles were made. If at a certain period of time Tom Renner finds that turn time and third fraction combined and hidden energy were getting all the winners at a given distance, that doesn't mean that's always going to be what gets it. If you keep a profile, what is getting the winners? If you keep a model, you know where your strengths and weaknesses are. Now, Jim Bradshaw will say, I don't keep no model. Gee, I don't know. And he doesn't do that. You know why? Because he's a Cherokee. I'm serious. This guy has a mysterious quality, an ability to sense what's happening, to sense from the matchup of the horses, to sense from some osmosis, from something that the gods have given him that they don't give to the rest of us, all this. Now, all of our guys have and still sometimes do make the mistake of feeling that, remember when they said what's good for General Motors is good for the general public? Well, some of them, sometimes they get to thinking, and this is just a natural human failing, that what they do, everybody can do. But that, folks, in the case of Bradshaw and Brohammer especially, is not true. You are never, ever, I am never, ever going to be a Bradshaw. I can talk funny, but I can't do what he does with it. I mean, this guy can do things, and so he'll say, well, I don't keep a model, I don't keep a profile, but but he always now amends it by saying, just because I don't do it, you do it. And sometimes he doesn't use a computer unless his wife gets a hold of him. Brohammer can do things by messing around with pace lines and projecting par variance and all sorts of strange things that I've never seen anybody else be able to do. So here's what happens. Too many people look up, but they look at Hamilton, they look at Schmidt. God help them. But some people do look at Schmidt and want to be just like Dick. Folks, there's a way to do this. I'll explain it to you in private. But you aren't going to be them. You cannot, unless you become them inside, you cannot imitate, oh, I like the way he does it, I want to be like him. But you can't do that. My son kind of put it today. He said, you've got to start off doing everything, all the steps. And then you will have a personality. Maybe you have a personality that's even stronger than Brohammer's or Bradshaw's. I doubt it, but you might. And you might have one stronger than Schmidt's and Hamilton's. But you have to discover it. They discovered it on their own. When they started this method, they did every one of these steps. And gradually, they were able to see things without going through those steps that justified their stop doing the steps actively. But until such time as you can emulate their performance, don't try to imitate their personality. That's the greatest problem with having personalities as your teachers. This guy, insane. Now, if you're willing to sacrifice your sanity and become like, then you've got to do it. You can't just imitate him. You've got to feel what he has inside. He's got that tenacity, that drive, that something that only he has. I don't know anybody ever wanted to be like me, but believe me, don't. I beg your pardon. Emulate the person's results, not their personality. You've got personalities. Every one of you has your own personality. And your personality is good enough if you develop it. Don't take a back seat. Don't say, oh, gee, I sure would like to be like so-and-so. Calling Dick Schmidt by name. So don't try to imitate the person. Duplicate their results through your own power. But first of all, run through all the steps. Each one of these guys, look at them, suave, debonair, successful. All of them were just groveling little people like you when I first, even Brohammer came to my home with his hat and literally in his hand, humble, and wanted me to teach him this method. Little did he know then that he was going to take advantage of me and become the world famous author that he was. But Purdy came, Brohammer came, Bradshaw, geez, Bradshaw crawled in one night. I mean, he came up to the front of a seminar, he came with his boots and Levi's on, and he comes in a little late and he crawls up right in front of his chair right there and says, howdy, I come to learn your methodology. How do you pronounce it? Mythology? He called it mythology. I said, Jimmy, Mr. Bradshaw, that's not mythology, that's mythology. And I explained to him what a mythology was. So every one of these people was very, very in the dark, so to speak. And every one of them went through all these steps we're encouraging you to go through. Now they're independent in many more ways than one. Probably this would be a good time to lighten things up. And I know of nobody who can lighten things up better than the darkest man in the house, Marion Jones. Cast off your yokes of slavery.
Come on, Marion, I want to be just like you.
Oh, my God. Good evening. I don't know what I'm doing up here so early. I thought they was going to let some of these guys, if they really know something about what they're doing. Okay. I'll tell you what. We all come here to learn something about horse racing. And I've never been in a seminar that I didn't learn something. I'll tell you, I've been to every one of them. And I've learned something to each one. We just in New Orleans the last time, and I'll tell you, I learned so much as I couldn't believe it. And I've been listening to the tapes that Joe Ray made since he mailed them to me, and it's really something to listen to and really to get some vital information from and continually improve yourself. If you don't have it, these tapes, get them. In this business of professional handicapping, or if you're a weekend warrior, whatever the case might be, The first most and important thing is learning the art of handicapping the races. So many people call me up that they want to just get a computer program and say they think the computer program is going to do it itself. It won't do it by itself. You've got to have some knowledge about what's going on in the race. You've got to have some feel about the race. You've got to be able to look at the past performance of all the horses in the race and kind of figure out how this race is going to shape up yourself in your own mind. You're going to, you know, we're forecasting what's going to happen in the future. We're trying to predict the future when you bet a horse race. So the first thing you want to look for is who's going to go to the lead, who's going to take the lead. And from there, you can kind of get a feel about how this race is going to set up and how it's going to be run before you start putting the horses in the computer program. If you see a real slow horse in there, you know he's slow, so you can eliminate him. You know, he says, this horse is slow, so I'll let him go. But you're going to have this yourself. This is something you got to build within yourself. And this all comes with the art of handicapping. I was at the races last Sunday, and they're running a mile and a quarter race for $10,000 claimers. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, what idiot would, you know, cart this kind of a race for $10,000 claimers? You know, $10,000 claimers, you know, and you get in Southern California, $10,000 claimers are really $10,000 claimers, you know, they really down there. And you're asking these horses to do something that you would expect a horse who had much better physical conditions than this type of horse to do. But if you look at the race and you get a feeling of how this race is going to be run, and I did, I looked at this race and I saw the speed in the race. And I saw, I says, I know who's going to take off after the speed. And I know that these horses are physically handicapped. Now, what horse in there is smart enough to know that he can stay back away from the pace and make one late run and win it? And I looked and I found him. And he opened at 11-1. And he ran exactly that way. But you have got to get that feeling. You've got to know when you look at that race and think about this race. This is a mile and a quarter race. And these horses, they're going to have trouble going a mile and a quarter and standing on their feet. You know, they might come get them in a little wagon and take them there. But you're going to have to realize that. So I'm looking at this race, and Molly, she says to me, my wife, she says, that race is terrible, isn't it? I said, yep, but here's a horse right here. This horse, he's going to lay back off them. He's going to wait till they get tired and beat them. They had a horse in there with a seven-horse field. They had a horse who had been working sharp, had a long layoff. You know he's rested. He's got a shot at it. He's rested. They worked him a mile and eighth in 156. He said, that's a good workout, you know. So you figured he might be somewhere around for your second choice. I figured he might hang around for the second place money. But what happened in this race, this particular race was, when this horse that runs to the front takes off, they all go out after him, even the horse with the long layoff. The horse that I picked to win the race is laying 4.5 back from them, just galloping along. And when they got tired, he went by them like they were standing still and paid $18 and some change. But these are the kind of things you have to feel. Now, you just somehow got to get it in your mind that there's something I've got to do before I turn to the computer. These computer programs are magnificent. They're remarkable. But I still find people at the races, if it's an 8-horse field, they got they put all the 8 horses in there if they can get them. I saw a guy with Synergism too, and he had all the horses in there. And I said, how in the world can you separate that? But you got to be able to separate it yourself. And the only way you're going to do it is you're going to have to begin to look at the races and make some comparison to the horses that are in the race, how they run, you know, how they shape up. How are they physically? Are they coming into form? How do you determine that? By looking at their past performances. You know, you look at when he won last time out, what did he do just prior to that race? How was his races? In the second race of that particular day, it's a 6-horse field. And you got a bunch of speed horses that ain't going a mile and a 16th. I don't keep a model. The reason why I don't keep a model is because I know the track changes back and forth, and sometimes the horses within the in the race determines how the race is going to be run. I don't need a model for that. I don't need, but you need one. I'm not telling you not to keep a model. You keep a model. So I look at this and I says, hey, this, we got about four horses in here going to be bidding for the lead. Now there's a horse and this is a tandem. And these are the things you got to learn. You got to learn what a tandem is. You got to learn how significant it is to remember that when you have horses coming out of a tandem, that you got to look at these horses more seriously. There's a horse in there that's beat these horses before. But there's a horse in there who had a long layoff since November of last year. Came out and won. Now, Bro Hammer has said time and time again that this horse would bounce his next time out. And he did. He bounced his next time out and got cleaned. He ran fourth, 4 3/4 lengths back. You know what I wrote up over him? Bounced in last, will nail him today. That's what I wrote up over this horse. And I went down and took his race where he won and put it in the computer with the rest of it. And he comes up with the best third fraction in the race. And that's what I'm looking for. He pays $37. But you've got to have this kind of feeling. You've got to develop it. You've got to look at the racing form and say, hey, these guys did a lot of work on this thing. You know? The guy who was calling the race when it was being run so they could chart it, they did some magnificent work. And you've got to be able to take that and look at it and make some decisions about it. Then when you go to your computer, you're going to use these horses. If I take that particular race where these horses came out of tandem and I end them all in the last race they run, I'm not going to get the winner. It's going to reflect that the horse who beat them last time out can beat them today. But I knew that the horse that bounced the last time out was in the same race with them. The trainer that claimed him and sent him right back with him, he's going to beat him. And he did. He beat him bad, too. $37. The daily double page about $270 or something like that. And the triple was $800 and some dollars.